Let's do this. The Cult of Hockey podcast by the faithful and for the faithful. I'm David Staples of the Edmonton Journal. I'm here tonight with Bruce McCurdy. Hey, Bruce.
Hey, David. How are you doing tonight?
I am doing A-okay. How are you doing, man?
Well, I'm kind of nonplussed tonight, David.
There you go.
Sat down a while. I look forward to the game. I thought, well, this is two contenders going at it tonight. And it's not really that important who wins, but, you know, it should be a really good game. And I have to tell you, I'm pretty disappointed to the point where I'm thinking I saw one contender tonight and one pretender and not a very good one in terms of the pretending part, because they look nothing like a competitive hockey team tonight here at Edmonton Oilers.
And I should tell the listeners that Bruce is not doing this under protest, but he was objecting a little bit to our format tonight of two good things, two bad things, and two numbers.
The ratio is all wrong.
And I just said, Bruce, I just want to get through this. Let's just hammer this out. Let's just get it done and forget about this game, which is what I think the Oilers are doing. The fastest I saw an Oiler move all night was Connor McDavid after the game was over, rocket off the ice into the dressing room. And I do not blame him. This was a stinker of a game, and some players especially had stinker games. And we will get into that a little bit. Bruce, the grade A shots were 16-14 for the Edmonton Oilers. 16-14, a lot of that was score effects. But we're going to dig a little deeper later on into the scoring chance grade A shot numbers in our numbers section that will shed more light on the actual story of this game. The 16-14 is for the basic grade A shots. They go in about 25% of the time. The Oilers had slightly more of those. I mean, the Jake Oettinger was very good. But Bruce, let's just go to your good thing. What is your good thing?
Oh, good thing?
Yeah, what's your good thing?
Well, okay, it's over. My good thing is that there's only like a couple games like this a year now, or there used to be a couple a month. Back in the decade of darkness, I'm honestly struggling. I mean, there was a few moments here and there that looked promising. But I honestly got nothing, David. The systems were just a complete crap show. And there was nothing sustained. There was no suggestion of players having one another's backs. So... Good thing. Well, they had a couple of good chances in the first 2 minutes before the game got away on them with a first of many egregious turnovers 2 minutes in. So let's go with that. It was a deflection by Warren Fogle in front, and then a rebound slammed in by Ryan McLeod when it was 0-0, and it looked like the Oilers had some zip and some jump for... was that a minute and 34 seconds? That's my good thing.
All right. Well, that was...
What do you got? I'm all ears.
Well, listen, the game was anybody's to win is the truth, at not just at the puck drop and not even at the end of the first period, but halfway, you know, 13 minutes into the second period, Bruce, this game is still anybody's to win. This is still anybody's to win. And that's because of, in large part, Calvin Pickard. The Oilers had lots of chances, but Calvin, you know, they hadn't scored. That'll happen now and then. But Calvin Pickard had made a lot of good saves by then. He was three grade A shots in the... second period, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the first. So he was holding his own. I had liked the idea of starting him. We talked about that last game, and we both agreed they should start Pickard. They did. I think that was a really good move. He is actually had been on a hot streak with five games at .933 save percentage. Stuart Skinner had been he's in a mini slump. Five games at .893 or .892, I think it was. And so it made a lot of sense to start Pickard. I think he did well in this game. Even on the goals that beat him, he wasn't terrible. Yeah. So my good thing is Calvin Pickard. He did his job. He kept the Oilers in a tough game long enough to give his chance a real honest shot at winning this game. And then they lost it in spite of his doing so. They lost it because other players made major, major mistakes and let the team down in that way. But it wasn't Calvin Pickard doing so.
Hung him out to dry, eh?
Did they ever, Bruce, what you, it drives me crazy how the Oilers get 2-on-1 breaks and they never score. And the other team gets 2-on-1 breaks or 3-on-2 breaks or 4-on-1 breaks. Mm-hmm. But forget the 4-on-1s, just 2-on-1 breaks. And they slot score pass, all the time.
Slam it into the net. How it works.
I'm just gonna segue to my bad thing.
Yeah, because, you go first.
Listen, Darnell Nurse had his worst game of the year. And he's struggling right now. There's no doubt about it. And I'm just trying to think the first goal was Draisaitl turns over the puck and there's an odd man rush because of it. Mm-hmm. And Daharne gets beat on the first pass and then Nurse gets beat on the second. And Bruce, we've been seeing Darnell Nurse get beat on that pass a lot this year, that 2-on-1 pass. He's going down. He goes down at the wrong moment. They make the pass and they score. And what is Nurse? He's 29, 30. He's been in the league a long time now.
29.
The thing I worry about with Nurse is that he should be getting better. You know, he was, I worried that he's regressed. I think he was a better player 2 years ago or a year ago, even at this time.
3 months ago.
Yeah, than he is now. I mean, he's been in just a horrendous defensive slump. And tonight was the epitome of it. The first goal was the smallest of the mistakes. The next goal against that he's on for is a power play goal. And again, I just didn't like his play. The puck came down low to the corner. And there was Kulak and Nurse down there, and there was two stars. There was one right in front of the net, and there was one in the corner. And Kulak couldn't cut off the pass coming out of the corner. But Nurse had no one else to cover except for the guy who was going to take that one-timer shot. There was no one coming in from the point. Mm-hmm. There was no pass to block. And he had his stick. He just had his stick in the wrong place. He didn't make the right read. He wasn't aware of where the Dallas players were on the ice to make the right read. He was facing the wrong way. He had his stick the wrong way. He didn't come close to blocking off the pass, and it was hammered right in the net. Like it was. It's kind of baffling that he made a mistake like that. But then came the mistake that got everybody's attention. And it was his third of the game, this kind of mistake. And the Oilers are having a power play. They have it deep in the Dallas end. The puck comes around the boards and Nurse is at the blue line. He's got to know the penalty's coming to an end then because he's an NHL hockey player and you're aware of the penalty coming to an end. You're aware the time's ticking down and you're aware that someone's going to be sneaking in behind you. You're also aware when the puck's coming around the boards, when you should pinch and when you shouldn't. And he wasn't even close to making that pinch on that play. The Dallas Star got it by him, and it became a 4-on-1 rush because of that bad pinch. Now, I think it was remarked upon in the Oilers broadcast, but on the TNT broadcast, that's the U.S. broadcast. Here's what U.S. TNT color commentator Eddie Olchuk had to say. He said, "You have to understand what the situation is, and it's Darnell Nurse again. You know the penalty is expiring. He walks down, and all of a sudden, you've got Dallas Stars coming out of the penalty box, coming out of the defensive zone. That can't happen." Mm-hmm. It can't happen, Bruce. It can't, especially to a veteran defenseman.
633 games, I think it is now.
So Nurse was my bad thing last game, and it was due to over-aggressive play. And here, again, we're seeing it. Like, you know, the first goal, he's trying to slide to stop, make the pass. He goes down too early. He often goes down too early on the play.
Slides right out of the passing lane. That's the part that got me. Like, he's sliding backwards so that when the puck goes across, you know, all it has to be is like 3 inches off the ice to get over his prone body and stick, you know, and gloves, because he hasn't even got his body in the passing lane. And I don't know if that's how they teach him to do the starfish, but
they teach them to, they teach it. You, if you're going to do it, you got to get the timing right. Yeah. It's all about the timing of the play. Yeah. Otherwise, why are you leaving your feet? I mean, I don't, I remember watching Nicholas Lidstrom play defense. He didn't leave his feet.
No, he didn't.
He was always on his feet. He stayed on his feet and he made the play because he read the play and he was able to be on his feet and move in the right direction at the right moment. Sprawling is not working for Nurse right now. I don't know. What do you think, Bruce? What did you think of his game?
I thought it was wretched, David. I thought that he gave up the passing lane on the first and second goals. And that third one, where, I mean, he's right on the blue line. Like, he's not even like 5 feet inside the line. He's right on the blue line. Puck comes around to the hash marks. The Nurse, who's standing still on his wrong side, no less, decides late, oh, I better go and pinch in on that. Well, if he'd made that strong, aggressive pinch right from the first moment, he might have won the puck. But he, you know, he gave himself a standing start and a 2-second penalty to go after it. And he didn't even come close. And the one guy that chipped it by him, he was the only guy that wasn't involved in the rush. I mean, it was, forget about the guy coming out of the penalty box for a second. It's a 3-on-1 without him. And he comes out of the box. Now it's a 4-on-1. And of course, he winds up, the guy that had the penalty winds up putting the puck in the net. And it was just an egregious decision. Well, as I said last podcast, poor decision making and poor execution is a very bad combination, and that was an absolutely glaring example of that principle.
Okay, well, I'm glad this defensive slump, it might just be a slump. Mm-hmm. He has played stretches of games much better hockey than this. Again, how many times recently, have you said this in the last couple of years? Keep it simple, Darnell Nurse, and you play a strong game. Just when you try to force things, man, it never seems to work. His judgment just seems to be off when he decides to take a chance. His risk reward on the ice, if he just decides, I'm not taking risks, I'm just going to play it safe, that's his game. That's Darnell Nurse's game. And because he's big and fast and quick and skilled enough to shut down the game if he keeps it simple and keeps it safe. But what about Bruce, that my comment about him regressing, do you think that's a fair comment or is that not?
Well, I mean, he played some of the stuff you see from him is like, it's still junior hockey, and this is a 9-year NHL player now. And I mean, when does that stop? And I mean, you know, he is a proactive player. He makes good plays. He makes bad plays. You got to accept a certain ratio, bad to good. But when it's 10 bad in one game, it almost doesn't matter how much good you do. You know, when it's -3 and plus a goal against when you're in the penalty box, plus you get a penalty, first penalty of the game for basically showing up the ref after the ref missed an obvious slew foot on Drysdale, and Darnell looked to me like he got a little bit petulant. Thought, oh, they're not calling anything, so I'm just going to stop up and take down the first Dallas Star I see. And he did that. And of course, the other ref behind him calls a penalty, and then he beaks the ref off and he's in the penalty box for 12 minutes. I mean, like, how is that helping your team? Tell me how that helps in any way.
And I know Nurse has a... Go ahead, sorry.
I was just going to say, I guess there was 12 minutes where there wasn't any blunders from Dr. 2-5, but, you know, that's almost a vicious thing to say, but the way he was playing tonight, man, he just did not have...
And I will say, I think it's fair to say that both of us are not Nurse, like in the faction of, like, there's some Nurse haters.
Well, I'm not a hater at all, but tonight.
No, you're not.
This game.
No, Yeah.
You know.
And I think we're both kind of have been fans of him and defenders of Nurse. And we certainly try to call them fairly. And in calling them fairly, we've had a lot of good things to say about Nurse for a long time over many years. But yeah, I started right in the playoffs last year, and it's continued on. Kind of some really rough play. And I don't quite get it, because they seem to be an increase in mental mistakes that he was not previously making, or making fewer of, or had a better ratio of good to bad. And maybe he's pressing. I don't know. He's just back off, man. Like, you get burnt like that, learn from it and don't do it again. Don't do it again. And things will work out. That's all I would say. All right, your bad thing.
Yeah, I'm going to basically go with all the other defensemen. Much as it pains me to let culprit forwards like Leon Draisaitl with his two giveaways for goals off the hook. But basically all the other defensemen, Evan Bouchard, four giveaways of the seven only that were charged to the Oilers tonight. Some pretty questionable puck movement. Cody Ceci, probably the best one. This was like the Toronto game, David, 11 days ago, when they also trailed 5-0 after the second period. Like, that shouldn't happen twice in a season, let alone within a fortnight. Matthias Ekholm, after I said so many nice things about him, had a wretched game, -2 and in the box for a third goal, and just looking generally out of sorts, no shots on net. Nurse, you talked about. But I will talk especially about the third pairing, Brett Kulak and Vincent Desharnais, who were wretched in this game. They had a terrible time of it. And here are some numbers for both of them are the same. 12 shot attempts, 4 to 20. 4 shots that weren't blocked to 17. And 2 shots on goal to 8. And outscored -1 for Desharnais. And he just seemed to be out of sorts. The puck was going through his stick. He couldn't make a clean handle of it. He couldn't make a clean pass. But I wonder what, since he got in that fight and he missed a couple of games, and since he came back, it seems like he's had his struggles with sort of basic handles of the puck. And anytime he does anything in the offensive zone, like tries to jump in 10 or 20 feet to get in a good shooting position, it's like the other team just jumps on the puck and dumps it behind him. And there's a race, and he's not going to win it very often. And that happened a couple of times tonight. And as for, Kulak, he got burned on the penalty kill for the one goal. Both him and Nurse got beat on that low pass right in front of the goal line. And they left him out there for the post power play with Bouchard, because normally Kulak isn't on the penalty kill. So those are the two fresh guys. So I thought, well, let's go with Bouchard. And even though Ekholm was fresh from being in the penalty box. And the puck went, and this happened like 4 times in the end of the second period. The Oilers get scored on. They drop the puck for the faceoff, and the puck will go straight into Edmonton's zone and all the way to the end boards. In this case, 6 seconds after that goal was scored, Kulak was lit up for a lost battle in the corner, and Draisaitl allowed a pass. It's like, that's your pushback from getting scored against? It's basically try and give up another goal right away?
It happened again
and again. And then the fifth goal, it wound up finally costing them, where they scored 21 seconds after. Again, the same thing. The faceoff went to maybe 3 feet on Dallas' side of center and then straight into Edmonton's zone. And there it stayed until the puck was in the net again. And it was like the team completely lost their crap for the last 7 minutes of the second period. And it was what the defense had a very rough night. And that third pairing, which normally doesn't get the toughest of the matchups, but tonight they just weren't up to it. Saddens me to say, but that's what I saw.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. All right, what's your number, Bruce?
Yeah, well, I'm going to go with the the five alarm chances in this game. We had grade A's at 16-14 for Edmonton, including 4-0 in the third period when it really mattered. But grade A shot, or five alarm shots, which are the most dangerous of the shots, 9-3 for Dallas, so 3 for Edmonton. That's putrid in its own right. 9-3 against. And David, I would estimate that Dallas had maybe as many as 6 grade A shots tonight, and 2 or 3 of them at least would have been five alarms where they missed the target. They had a great chance right in front, and the guy fired a heavy shot that just missed the net or whatever. And so this is artificially low in terms of what we counted because of the way we count wide shots don't count versus what the Oilers gave up, which were great looks where the guy happened to miss the net. And so if anything, this number flatters Edmonton 9-3 in the most dangerous of scoring chances. I mean, 5-0 tells its own tale, doesn't it?
Yes. 9-3 was the key stat in that game, other than the score 5-0. That was the key, most key of all stats, as it is in every game. But that was very telling that Dallas had all these fantastic chances and the Oilers couldn't muster much against the Stars.
The speed, they just were too fast.
Yeah. Even the ones that, so my number is 3. It's the 3 time the Oilers hit the post. 2 of them were kind of outside shots. CC's was an outside shot, heavily screened, to the credit of the screener, who was Sam Carrick. Corey Perry came in and just ripped a slap shot, which was a grade A shot just because of his great shot. Like he hammered that. He beat the goalie cleanly, but it hit the post. And the key moment of the game is probably when Draisaitl hits the post on the power play with his executioner shot. Mm-hmm. And the game is 1-0 Dallas at that point. If he scores, Bruce, we got a game. It's 1-1. And it changes everything. Because I don't think hockey is a game of momentum. And I don't think the difference between these two teams is 5 goals.
Of course not.
No, they're very closely matched. And which, you know, brings to the conundrum, you know, what does this game mean? Does it mean anything? I'm glad this happened tonight. It gives the Oilers, it should burn them. They should be burning right now. And Nurse,
I would hope so.
Nurse should be reflecting, okay, and like thinking, enough, why do I do that? I got to stop doing that. Like a lot of players, and you know, have to be thinking about their games and think, okay, I got to buckle down here. I've got to do better. And that's a good thought heading into the playoffs. I mean, I think it's been two years in a row where the Oilers have been heading into the playoffs on a high, you know, winning a ton of games. I'm not against them getting a few hard lessons in these next few weeks and struggling into the playoffs a bit. And having to raise their game at that point. I think this team has showed us, Bruce, they are capable of playing solid defensive hockey. And for long stretches of time, we've seen that through the year. We saw it for like 6 weeks, and we've seen it in a number of games where they've just come up with superior defensive efforts. They're going to need to play superior defensive hockey to win the Stanley Cup. And this is a reminder of that. They can't be reminded of enough, it seems, this team, because they have a proclivity to want to take chances and attack, maybe get outworked. And until they stop doing that, they're not going to win the Stanley Cup. So I'm okay with this. I don't think it's a big deal. I don't even think it's that telling, honestly. It's just, you know, if the bounces had gone a little different earlier in the game, we might have had a different result. But it is telling that if the Oilers don't play defense, if the Oilers make mental errors, they can't win, and they're not going to win. And they could easily get blown out in a series even if they don't buckle down. And I like that message hammered into this team repeatedly because they need it.
Yeah, well, here's another number I'm going to slide in about tonight's game. Oilers had 74 shot attempts tonight, and Dallas had 63. But of the Oilers 74, Dallas blocked 25. So one in every three Oilers shot attempts got blocked by the Dallas defense. Of Dallas' 63 attempts, Oilers blocked 9. One out of every seven that they were somewhere near the shooting lane enough that they could get in the way. Like Dallas was getting clean looks and shots, and the Oilers were not competing hard enough to, you know, get in the zone and get in their way.
Yeah, that's an excellent stat.
9.
Good stat. That's the tail of the game right there as well. It's in, you know, Bruce, I think the owners are engaged in this, in an exercise in load management. They're just not, they're not sitting out games, but they're kind of taking games off a little bit. Like there's been a lot of games, I think, in the, since their winning streak, since they got it together and it looked like they're going to make the playoffs. There's been a number of games where they're backing off. They're not hitting. They've played the odd physical game, but not really. Not consistently, haven't played physical hockey since the winning streak. And I think that they are backing off a few things that where you get hurt, like hitting and blocking shots. And they're saving that for the playoffs, which is, can you turn it on? Can you turn it off? I think veteran players can actually turn it on and turn it off. I think smart, older players can do that. They have to save themselves for the playoffs. Maybe we'll see that you can't suddenly crank it up. But I have an inkling that they're going to be able to do that, mainly because we've seen it in so many games this year where they have played that kind of hockey. Really, for the first time in the McDavid era, consistently, they've played that kind of hockey this year. Maybe in, let's say, 30 to 40 games, and in the other games, not even close. Maybe 30 to 40 is a bit high, but yeah, it's about 30 or 40 where we've seen that solid defensive game, lunch bucket hockey. And I think we'll see it again in the playoffs. So if you turn it off though against the Dallas Stars, that's not going to work.
Nope. So anyway, here they are. They've got, you talk about load management. And here they're coming home to play Colorado one game on Saturday and then they're right back into Calgary to play on Saturday.
Yeah.
Then they got 3 days off, and then they finish with six days and nine games. It's going to feel like that before we're done. To close out the season, the harshest schedule of any team in the league. And then, of course, the NHL has just announced out of the blue with 3 weeks to go in the season that they're going to move up the start of the playoffs. So you damn well better get your load management in while however you can.
What day is it starting,
by the way? Well, it was supposed to start on the Monday, and now they're talking about starting it on Saturday. The season ends on Thursday with, you know, 5-7 from the Oilers' perspective. And, you know, it's not much of a turnaround time, and they just, you know, it'd be the sort of thing, like, if I'm imagining it being a member of the Oilers Board of Governors saying, well, if you're going to give us the end of the season like that, give us, you know, the second playoff game on the Tuesday so we have time to recover. Well, now they've moved the whole damn thing, or they're talking about moving the whole damn thing up. That's going to be a huge challenge. And, of course, the schedule has been approved because nobody knew this originally. Like, why would they? They did the same thing last year and started the playoffs on a Monday, and now they're changing their mind in, like, end of March. Like, what the hell kind of league is this?
I know anyway. There's a huge event for Cal Nichols on the 20th, which was planned for the 20th of April because the playoffs weren't then, right? Like, they're thinking, here's a little break, right, and we'll have this major event for Cal for all his contributions to the city. So that is bad news maybe the Oilers won't play game one, like, the first night. And
well, they should absolutely demand that.
Yeah, and Ken Holland should use every bit of clout.
Probably
he's got.
Be almost in the CBA in terms of, they can't crunch games that close together and doing it and then having it bleed into the playoffs. Just
when's the Oilers' last game? The night, is it the 19th?
Thursday the 18th. They play on the 10th, 12th, 13th, 15th, 17th, and 18th.
Ay.
Thanks, league.
Thanks,
and league. So. So my question would be, okay, we've now reached the point with, I think, 16 days left. And the way the cap savings have worked, the Oilers could now call up, by my math, three players from Bakersfield. There's no limit on how many players you have on the roster, as long as you can fit them under the salary cap. So at what point will the Oilers bring up? And who will they bring up? Might they bring up Broberg, Holloway, and Lavoie? Stick them all in the lineup and have them playing and getting these other guys some rest?
I guess they can't waive anyone because they'd probably be taken on the waivers. They don't have to waive
anyone.
No, I know they don't have to, but just in terms of the salary cap, because you want to be as low against the cap as possible so you can use as much bonus money from this year.
It's
relatively
trivial, that amount.
If it is trivial, bring up, they're not making a lot of money, any of those three guys. So.
Well, by my math.
Well, what about Gagne? I wouldn't bring up, I'd bring up Gagne, not Lavoie.
Well, maybe he's the third guy.
Gagne, Holloway, and Broberg.
The temptation would be to call up guys and, you know, and liberally use them in the last few games. But in the meantime, it'd be nice to clinch a playoff berth. They didn't make much progress in that regard tonight with their full team.
Indeed. Bruce, let's leave it there. Thanks for talking tonight.
Yeah, done with that one. Thanks for listening, everyone. Park it.
Park it. And in the meantime, and in between times, this has been another edition of the Cult of Hockey podcast.